All right. Good afternoon, everyone. So we're going to switch from perennials and going to some annual biennial talks. So today I'll be talking some of our work on EnergyBeat production on high organic soils in South Florida. I would like to acknowledge my co-author, Greg Nusley, who's been working with me on this project. Just a little bit of an overview, I guess. So you all are familiar, I guess, with most of this, that most of the ethanol production in the U.S. Is concentrated in the Midwestern area. Florida does consume around 1 billion gallons of ethanol per year, but right now commercially we do not produce any ethanol. So there's definitely a market there that can be built in future. Just a quick overview of some projects that were supposed to come online a few years back, but not a whole lot has been done on that side. Two of these, the U.S. EnviroFuels and the Southeast Renewable Fuels, are a simple sugar to ethanol processing plant that was supposed to be online like 3 or 4 years ago, but I think because of a challenge of producing feedstocks year around, we are still facing with that issue of the availability of feedstocks throughout the year to run these plants. So there's definitely a research required to identify crops that we can use in rotation with our current cropping systems to be able to supply those commercial plants if they were to come online in future. And that's where our work was focused on energy beets, which are similar botanically to sugar beets. The only difference is they are high in sugar content. So the main breeding goal is to develop high sugar content, which could be sucrose, glucose, or fructose, while in sugar beets, the idea is to develop high sucrose content. They have a C3 photosynthetic pathway, so more adapted to cooler environment conditions, but we have some tropical varieties that have been developed and can be used in a subtropical environment like Florida. So because of that, they have a wide geographic range, and botanically it's a biennial crop, but it's ready for harvest in anywhere from 4 to 8 month time period. And in Florida, this crop can be rotated with another biofuel crop such as sweet sorghum, which is a summer crop, and energy beet can be used as a winter crop, or it can be rotated with our commercial crop sugarcane, which is a 4 year cycle crop, has one fallow year in every 4 years, and energy beets can be grown in that year to develop some extra biomass. So the research objectives for this project was to get some idea of how much biomass as well as the sugar yield we can get out of energy beets in our production area. And then we were interested in determining the optimum time of planting as well as optimal harvesting window for energy beets in our area. And then lastly, to evaluate the effects of any insect and disease on the varieties that we have commercially available. So the field trial was set up at Everett's Research and Education Center in Belgrade, which is in South Florida, right in the middle of our sugarcane production area in the state. The average temperature throughout the season is around 24 degrees centigrade, but during winter time, which we were targeting for the beets, our average is still around 21 degrees centigrade. And rainfall for the whole season is 1,400 millimeters, but for our winter time, it's anywhere from 5 to 600 millimeters. And the trial was conducted on a histosol with the high organic matter, anywhere between 60% or higher than that. We had four variables that we studied: planting dates, three of them, October, November, and December, again, to fit this crop into our rotations with other crop, and four harvesting windows starting from March all the way to June. And then we had three commercial varieties from our partners with Betaseed, and all of them are Roundup Ready varieties. We evaluated two pest management scenarios, no spray plots, and then we separate for both for insect and disease. For insect, we separate at a 20% infection insect threshold, and for disease, we separate on a calendar base and end up separating between 6 to 8 times. The trial was set up as a strip plot design with 4 replicates. We ended up having around 300 plots, so it was quite a bit of work to finish. The data was analyzed using GLEMEX procedures in SAS. Again, the trial was conducted 2 years, in 2013-14 and 2014-15, and in this talk, I'll be focusing on 2013-14 season. Again, the soil type was a histosoil, high organic matter. John Deere planter was used to plant at 30-inch row spacing. Target population was around 35,000 plants per acre. That gives around 2 beets per linear foot. Liquid fertilizer was applied with some nitrogen in it to give an initial kick. And after that, no nitrogen was applied because these high organic soils do mineralize quite a bit of nitrogen through the season. And some manganese sulfate was applied because these soils are low in manganese, along with some micronutrient package later in the season. And Roundup was applied to control all the weeds. For harvesting, we harvested one middle row of our 4-row plot to evaluate the total biomass, and then we subsampled around 6 to 10 beets to get our partitioning into root and leaves, and the roots were cut into small pieces, shredded, and the shredded biomass was actually using a mechanical press. We got some juice, and the juice was clarified and estimated for Brix content, which is a total soluble sugar content inside the juice, and the total sugar yield was estimated by multiplying the root yield with the moisture content of the beets times Brix, considering around 90% of Brix is soluble sugars. Moving on to results, so the next few tables are going to look like this. We have variable that we studied on the left-hand side, starting with fresh total yield, but I'll be focusing on the fresh root yield, which is the commercial component over here, and the fresh leaf yield, and then the Brix percent, and the estimated sugar yield. So in this table, we have 3 planting dates, October, November, and December. If you look at the fresh root yield, highest yields were observed in October. We had around some yield penalty in November, but the yields declined really when we went back all the way to December for planting. And if you look at the fresh leaf yield here, that actually stayed similar between October and November and even declined a little bit in December. And that was because of a higher or an increase in leaf fraction compared to root fraction as we went into different plantings starting from October to December. Moving on to Brix, between October and November, we did not see any difference in sugar concentration, but a decline in December. And looking at the estimated sugar yield, which is the final component, combination of the root yield and Brix, we had a significantly higher yield in October, declined around 17% in November, and a higher decline of around 67% in December. So our optimal planting time was in October, which could be delayed into November to work our crop rotation, but December we had a high yield penalty. Moving into harvesting dates, again we had 4 harvesting dates starting from March all the way to June. If you look at the fresh root yield, we had a lower yield in March, and they increased as we go into our season. Higher numbers were seen in April, and May and June we had the highest yield. So May and June were our highest yielding dates as far as the root yield is concerned. And again, if you look at the fresh leaf yield, the trend was other way around, again, because of the leaf fraction. The early harvestings had a higher fraction towards leaf compared to the roots. So those trends were reversed. Looking at Brix, again, the Brix content increased going from March till April and May. And then we had a decline in June, and that was because of decomposition of beets that was literally happening because of we had our wet season starts in end of May, early June, and we had a lot of root rot coming into the equation, caused mainly by Sclerotium fungus. So we had a decline there. So looking at the final sugar yield, our highest yielding date was in May, followed by June and April, and lowest yielding was in March. So to get optimal yield, the best time to harvest is around May. And then depending on a weather for a given year, in June it can go down. And this is again data from first year. In second year, we actually observed even a higher yield penalty in June. So probably that might be too late to harvest in our scenario again. Moving on to different varieties, we evaluated three different varieties which had different levels of resistance to Cercospora leaf spot. Here we saw some difference in root yield between the first two varieties. ES304 had higher root yield and lower compared to ES305. But if you look at the BRICS data, that was other way around. A lower numbers in ES304 compared to ES305. So essentially ended up having non-significant differences in varieties when the total sugar yield is estimated. The previous history of these three varieties had showed some similar results. So that was consistent in our location as well. Moving on to pest management, here we had some significant interactions of our spray management with either planting date, the figure on the left, or the harvest date, the figure on the left. Similar trends holded up for most of our variables that we studied. And I'm just presenting data on estimated sugar yield in megagrams per hectare over here. And if you look at the planting dates, we saw, again here, the blue is no spray and the red is spray treatments. So for planting dates, early plantings in October and November showed a beneficial yield as far as spray schedule is concerned. We did not see any difference in December. And it was mostly driven by the insect pressure was higher during those months of November and December. So the December planting essentially missed that window. So we didn't see any benefit there. Moving on to harvest date, we saw only significant differences in our late harvestings in May and June, and did not see any benefit of spray in March and April. And probably the longer duration of those harvestings in May and June contributed to that, because we were able to keep some fresh green canopy with our spray schedule for a longer duration that helped increased photosynthetic activity in those two harvesting dates. Some of the production challenges we had, even though these beets were Roundup ready, we had a huge issue with the ragweed parthenium. We had some resistance in this wheat, and there was also issue of thick cuticles in this weed, which reduces absorption of Roundup as far as this weed is concerned. So we had to go in and hand pull quite a few of them. So that would be one of the issues if the beets were to grow commercially. And then we had issues with the two main diseases, Cercospora leaf spot and root rot, the figure on the right that started towards the end of the season when our wet season started. And we also saw some nutrition deficiency, some hollow hearts that was caused due to boron deficiency. And in the second year, we were able to apply some boron to get rid of that deficiency. We also saw some nematode damage, but that was mostly restricted to our sandy soils, and we did not see that on our high organic muck soils. So in summary, we were able to show that there's a potential for high biomass as well as high sugar yield for energy beets in our production area. And for planting, the early season planting is the way to go. October is the best time. It can be delayed up to November, but not into December. And for harvesting, as we go late into season, from March till May, we had an increase in yield, but too late harvesting into June, we had a reduction in yield. We did not see any effect with NSGBT varieties. We are testing more germplasm this year to see if we can find more varieties which have high resistance to Cercospora, and that can help in commercial production of beets. For pest management, we saw beneficial effects only in early plantings and late harvestings. And our major production challenges includes weeds, some diseases, and some nutritional issues. And with that, I would like to acknowledge our funding partners, Betaseed, and all the people who helped harvest those 300 plots to get all of this data. And with that, I'll take any questions. Yes.
One quick question. You mentioned growing the beets in rotation during the fallow period after sugarcane.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like, based on the schedule that you say best for growing these beets, that would maybe take 5 or 6 months out of that fallow period.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would subsequently affect the cane yield that planted following that?
Right now the cane is a 4-year cycle again, so. At the end of the third year, the harvesting is done around September to October time. So that's why we were testing that, okay, can we, instead of planting in October, can we go late in the season into December, which the data showed that we cannot do that. And then same with the harvesting time, that if we go too late into the season, we were not able to maintain our yields. But as far as the cane yield of the next cropping cycle is concerned, we do not know based on what we have, the data from this experiment. But right now, cane is rotated with other crops, corn or vegetables. And the idea is to basically break the cycle, the continuous cycle of cane. So if you have any increase in the harmful soil fungus or any other microbes in the soil, you break their rotation. And our hope is using energy beets or a root crop, we can able to do the same thing that that's been done with corn or other veggies.
There's